There are several theories about the origin of the synagogue. One posits that the synagogue developed during the Babylonian exile in the 6th century BCE. When the Judeans were forced from their land, their temple was destroyed, and Jews had to recreate their faith without a central shrine. During the exile, the Judeans may have developed the habit of coming together in festivals to read from the Holy Law. A second theory derives the synagogue from a custom called Ma'amadot, which required every community to send delegates twice a year to the temple in Jerusalem. They brought gifts and assisted at the sacrifices. Presumably, the custom developed that the hometown folk would come together and recite the same psalms and sing the same hymns which the delegates were singing in Jerusalem. Now, we cannot prove either theory. And what matters is that the institution of the synagogue is 2,500 years old, and over these 25 centuries has been the cradle of our faith. Therefore, I would like this morning to look at the present version of the synagogue in the light of Jewish needs. My first observation is that by itself, institutional change cannot guarantee the success of the Jewish religious enterprise. The congregation must want the synagogue to succeed. You can't consider yourself a Jew simply by appearing on a congregation's membership roll. But that's not what I mean by Judaism. Judaism is a personal commitment. It cannot be handed down. It must be struggled for. It must be earned. The first step is necessarily yours. You must volunteer to take part in the Jewish religious enterprise. Judaism has never believed in vicarious faith. No institution can substitute for personal faith. Yet many seem to define their Judaism simply as belonging to a synagogue. Paying membership dues, sending children to religious school, having the rabbi solemnize a marriage, occasionally attending on the holidays. They say, what more can be asked of thee? Those who so define Jewish religious life ultimately discover that their faith is not satisfying. It's superficial, it's bland. And it's too bad that this attitude is so widespread, for rarely have the balanced judgments of Judaism as high spiritual and ethical disciplines been more urgently needed. These are times full of change. We have more opportunity than ever before, more freedom, and more nervous breakdowns. What is required of us? By whom? What is the way we should go? How can we achieve peace of mind? How can we achieve happiness? All of us are troubled by such questions. What was certain a generation ago is no longer certain. We found ourselves constantly changing direction. It's precisely the business of faith to help us to develop answers to the questions of value and of meaning. Scripture never commands, join a congregation and gain a faith. It says simply, seek ye me and live. You personally seek God. How do we seek God? By searching for him, by admitting the shadows and the sunshine of life, the anguish and the love, the fear and the hope, by seeking meaning. We call ourselves the children of Israel. How did we get the name? Israel, of course, is Jacob's other name. The name he earned by wrestling the long night with the angel, his conscience, a long night during which he was not overcome. If we call ourselves the children of Israel, then we must accept life in its rawness, accept reality with all of its quixotic nature. We must not assume that life is other than it really is, serious, sometimes brutal, sometimes cruel, always short, demanding of us strength and vision. The first step in the reconstruction of the synagogue is confession that each member must make. I need to understand. I want to know. I am a seeker. This means putting aside the pretense that I have nothing to learn. It is the recognition I have everything to learn. I need to know how to feel, how to be passionate, how to be involved. What happens when the serious and the sensitive do come to the synagogue? Does the modern American synagogue really support their search for faith? I sometimes doubt it. Much that occupies a typical American synagogue must be classified as a spinning of wheels, seeking solace rather than spiritual meaning, the gentle word rather than the living word. How much of what happens is tangential to the religious enterprise, and how much of it is central? The form was the faith of those 19th century Jews who felt that there was greatness in the tradition and meaning, but who were no longer satisfied with parochial community attitudes. They sought to cut away the underbrush so that the tall trees, the central themes of Judaism, might emerge for all to see. The form was the creation of those who recognized that the synagogue was the filter through which each generation addresses the ancient message of faith. It's well to remember that Moses did not receive the Union Prayer Book or the Gates of Prayer at Mount Sinai, that Aaron did not dictate to Israel a religious school curriculum which all Jewish schools must follow. What Moses had were commandments, the mitzvot, and what every generation of Jews has had is the responsibility of taking these commandments and translating them into terms which you and I can understand and make effective in our lives. Let's ask ourselves, what is the real purpose of a synagogue? A synagogue exists in order to support anyone who seeks holiness, kedusha. Judaism has a particular definition of kedusha, holiness. Holiness is not an exuberant pietism, or midnight vigils, or fasting, or lacerations of the flesh. Holiness is not closing ourselves away from the world. Holiness is not even to live a life of worship and of prayer. Holiness is a spiritual discipline and a moral self-discipline. It is an understanding of the ethical commandments, an insight into what is significant in life and what is trivial, tinsel, and trash. The book of Leviticus defines what is holy. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Honor thy father and thy mother. Revere the Lord thy God. Remove the stumbling block from before the blind. Do not bear a grudge. Do not seek vengeance. Speak truth and never falsehood. Kedusha is a way of life sanctified by ethical concerns, by the understanding which the individual brings to his search. All that take place in a synagogue should be conducive to making us understand how we can become kadosh, holy. Why do we worship regularly? Because it is a constant caution against the humdrum, the base, and the vulgar, which might divert us from our concern with kedusha. Why is there a congregation? Because holiness is not something one can achieve alone. We need the cooperation of family and of friends. We need worship, study, and congregation, which are the traditional collective terms which describe synagogue life. Does a modern synagogue really help us find kedusha? There is beauty to our ritual. There are discussions of moral values in our schools. The proper words are spoken. But how often do we touch the living flesh? There is too much that is peripheral. The test of worship is not its theological correctness, but its vitality. Does it touch me? Does it change me? In what ways? The proof of faith lies not in logic, but in life. Is it receptive? Is it effective? Can it be a catalyst to change? Does it move people to act better than they might otherwise? What does it do for me? Compare the synagogue of the shtetl with a modern synagogue. The shtetl synagogue was a little room. Jews come in the morning for worship or for Talmud study. And three times a day, Jews come for public worship. Occasionally, there would be a great fight over some shtetl policy. At its best, the shtetl synagogue was a place of learning and of worship by people who truly cared. It was a place of wrestling with life. It was a center of communal life. The shtetl was self-enclosed and parochial. 19th century reform recognized that we were part of a larger world, and we needed to know how to relate to that world. We sought to bring the modern world's aesthetics, its music, its beauty, into the synagogue. We sought to explain our faith as much to those outside the synagogue's walls as to ourselves. We sought to make ourselves respected and respectable. The 19th century was the age of humanism, of emancipation, of optimism. And we Reformed Jews sought to be reasonable, sweet, and understanding in all that we said and all that we did. But you and I live after Auschwitz. Confidence has been bled from our lives. Our spirits are emotionally darker than those of our ancestors 100 years ago. We are no longer conditioned to be optimistic. We have learned that hate is not easily eradicated, that sweet reason does not necessarily change the ways in which men govern their lives or bring justice to their societies. What will the synagogue be like a generation from now? I believe that synagogues will be larger, but that groups within the synagogue will be smaller, more intimate. Many more will speak. Our concerns will be more intimate. The synagogue will be a place where people come and rub elbows, not pass silently through revolving doors. The groups within the synagogue will be groups to whom we can relate, as people to people. The one thing you and I must learn is how to be human. And we can learn that only as we meet with other humans and share intimacy with them. That means we will still have real contact with people beyond the narrow nuclear units of which we are a part. We come here for friendship and the support that friendship brings. We come here for learning, to share experiences and insight. We come here to meet with those whose life experience is similar to ours and whose hopes parallel ours. Tomorrow's synagogue will have to provide a variety of opportunities for such meetings. There will be more dance, more singing, more movement, less concern with decorum, more with awareness, sensitivity, and congregation. These changes will not come easily. Changes will demand flexibility from all of us. It's easy to be happy with familiar ways, less so with change. But I am confident that men and women are turning to faith with a greater sense of urgency than heretofore. Over the past years, in universities and formal meetings, hundreds of young Jews have taken courses in mysticism. Why? Because they didn't find enough life, enough depth, enough warmth in the worship presented to them in their synagogues. They felt the need for quiet, for warmth, the experience of true worship. What is true of worship is true of meeting, and of meeting is also true of learning. We must study our tradition so that we draw from it insights which deal with the confusions of our day, which tell us not so much what is right politically or necessary economically, and how we feel each day with grace and with meaning. More and more we turn to the synagogue to support our identity as Jews. That identity is threatened in the Soviet Union, is threatened in the Middle East. At the very least, it is threatened here by affluence and by ease. Return to the synagogue for support, for encouragement, for the grace which inspires life, values which Jews have always found in their synagogues. Next years will be changeful years, exciting years, revolutionary years, years in which we will need a vital faith. If we don't find such a faith, our young people will turn increasingly to other sources of spiritual insight and to other ideologies for their support. I would far rather have them here. What we have to teach is humane. It is full of love, full of respect for each other and for all humanity. It is full of dignity and nobility. It is truly a message full of hope. Amen.